Real quick before we go to question and answers, if you guys got your books, look back at the traditions real quick. I want to show you something. Look at tradition 5. Go to 3 first. I don't know, because I've got a little book. It's in the traditions in the very back of your book. There's a short form and a long form.
563 in the fourth edition.
It's page 560. What the hell? Y'all got it? Got it? Real quick. Everybody wants to read when we read in our meetings, we read the short forms of the traditions, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. You're down with that? We read them. You with us? Look across the page to the long form, Tradition 3. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. That's two different things. And everybody wants to just go to the short form, but the long form that the short form was taken from says quite clearly, our membership is for alcoholics, people who are suffering from the disease of alcoholism. The desire to stay sober is not the requirement for membership in this fellowship. You with me? Looks, some of you just look like you've just been slapped. Look at tradition 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Myers read it this morning. Read the long form. They just add a little bit to it. I think a very important piece. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity, having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. You with us? Not a therapy group, a spiritual group. I got to tell you, folks, we're going to hit it so hard this afternoon about this refusal to talk about God in meetings, it'll make your head swim. We're going to open this up for questions. We're talking specifically about primary purpose this morning. This afternoon, we're going to hit working with others and some sponsorship stuff, meeting formats. In here right now, if any of y'all have questions about our primary purpose, because we're taping this, if you'd like to come up to this podium and ask the questions, and then we'll sit here like little crows on the edge of our seats and attempt to answer that question based on our experience in this deal. And hopefully we'll get some question and answer out of this. All right? Who'd like to be first? Maybe I'll make that a little clearer. If you'd like to ask a question, you could go. or we could go smoke. What? You got a question? Would you want to come up here and ask the question? That way it'll be taped. Otherwise, we just have to repeat it. And if you just come up and ask the question, then we can. You want to do that? Well, that's what was requested. So I don't. There you go.
Just wanted to ask you what sentence in the book you think is the most important? Not your favorite, the most important sentence.
Great question. Chris Raymer, alcoholic. Am I on? We just read it when I was talking earlier. Selfish and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. To me, there's. Can y'all hear it? There's two places in the book. The place on page 24 where it talks about being powerless over, we have lost the power of choice, but the selfish and self-centeredness, that's what changed everything for me. I mean, guys, I spent years believing that alcohol was my problem, and if I just didn't drink, everything was going to be okay. And the truth is, if we just don't drink and we're alcoholic, everything is not going to be okay. It's going to be very, very bad, very, very quick, because the internal condition will become so uncomfortable we won't be able to stand ourselves. And that's where we end up coming out sideways. How many of y'all have noticed in periods of dry time when you weren't working the steps that you started coming out sideways in other areas? You know, you start acting out sexually, start having affairs or overeating or overshopping or picking up other addictions. That's where the treatment centers bought into this addictive personality. No, no. These are just character defects that start surfacing that we try to medicate the spiritual malady with. You down with that? And I never understood that until I read page 62 that said selfish and self-centeredness. That's the problem. I think the world revolves around me. How do I know that? How do y'all know that? Because all I want to talk about is me. Down with that? That's mine. How about yours?
Mine was lack of power. That was my dilemma.
Oof.
And that was with me for a long time. Recently is now on page 68 that God will demonstrate through me what he can do.
Oof.
That stuff on page 64, where it talks about spiritual malady, 99% of the guys that I work with are seeking to connect a bunch of dots around why they do the goofy things that they do. And I'm so baffled by how many people come into this deal, spend years and years and years, and never ever, that little piece on the bottom of page 64 where it says, resentment is the number one offender, it destroys more alcoholics than anything else, from it stem all forms of spiritual disease. I thought we were talking about booze here. Now they're talking about a spiritual disease where we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. And then here's our marching orders. When this spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. What does that mean? Well, it means what it said. If I'll focus on the spiritual nature of my disease, I'll straighten out mentally and physically. The mental obsession that kicks my ass is going to be dealt with. The physical allergy which kicks my rear is going to be dealt with. But I got to deal with it through a spiritual deal, it's an internal solution to what's been kicking me, you see? But nobody ever read that stuff. I'll never forget at 7 years sober reading that in a meeting one night at Primary Purpose Group, and I went, what is that? All of a sudden, all the dots got connected, and I went, no kidding. I have finally an understanding of what it is I need to do to get clear of this stuff. But nobody ever read it to me. We were too busy talking about Sally Sue's divorce and those other Tradition 10 busters as outside issues.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greg. Great.
Thanks, buddy.
Good question.
Hello, I'm Daniel. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Daniel.
Frankie, I've heard many people say, of course, people carrying a good message talk about AA is your life. And I want a little clarification on that. I hate fanatics of any kind. You know, when I walked here, the church sign is advertising for Christian aerobics. And I wonder how Christian aerobics is any different from any other kind of aerobics. And I'll read here from page 125, last paragraph. Many alcoholics are enthusiasts. They run to extremes. At the beginning of recovery, a man will take, as a rule, one of two directions. He may either plunge into frantic attempt to get on his feet in business, or he may be so enthralled with his new life that he talks or thinks of little else. In either case, certain family problems arise. And it sounds like the guy who's talking about it is like maybe a fanatic. And I'm just wondering, when you say it's your life, what does that exactly mean? I mean, are you always talking about it? I mean, is it AA to make us normal in the world that we're not always revolved around everything? Or really, is it your life? I mean, is it like, you know, religion? So.
Good question.
Who wants to leave? It is my life. It's what God allows me to do. I have been one of those people who were out every night of the week, making two meetings a day. And if I missed one night to spend time with the family, I felt like I was selling myself short. And what I've been moved to do is learn how to spend time with family, and I'm still out a few nights a week and taking these principles into my home occupation and affairs. And I think I'm unthinking when I think that if I make seven meetings a week and neglect family and friends, that I'm sober and spiritual. But it is my life. It's who I be. It's what God allows me to do. And what I mean by that is it's because of what I've been given here and experienced the glory of God, it allows me to do other things. Without this, You're looking at someone else here this weekend. I wake up upon awakening. I make time with my God, who I love and adore. Throughout my day, I walk with the Spirit of God, with all falling short in thought, word, and deed. When I'm interacting with others, I go with my God. My vision for you, my vision for me, is to go with God into all my affairs. That sounds like it's my life. I don't live in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think God wants me to do that either. But AA isn't, I hear, AA is a bridge back to life. I don't want to do that deal. Because that means, for me, I interpret that as AA got me sober, now I go live life and forget about AA. I have to keep on the firing line. And so I have a life because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of a loving God. But this is home for me. It allows me to incorporate other things into my life. This is what I'm about. And I really have no problem sharing that from any podium. Anything less would be a lie. That's it.
That's a great question. And it gets asked often. Because some people view what we would do today as an extreme set of circumstances. Being the poster boy of middle-of-the-road solution, that's me, okay, for so many years. And so I come from a fairly unique position, I think anyway, of being able to see the devastation of middle-of-the-road solution and what it can create, to over here where I'm able to daily see through email and through talking to people personally, the effects of a more focused and a more text-based recovery. It's an amazing thing to see the difference. Not only the fact that people are staying sober, but the fact that people are walking free and clear of this deadly disease and are, for the very first time in their life, experiencing things that they never experienced before. Like being creative, being a part of a whole, that stuff on 19 about being, demonstrating how you can change in your life and this sort of thing. You know, 17 years removed, almost 17 years removed from booze and those other outside issues, my wife doesn't really relate to that stuff anymore. What she does relate to on a day-to-day basis is that I'm where I'm saying I'm going to be and that I'm there for her and that I'm doing the things. You understand what I'm saying? Like this. And yes, I think that sometimes we get really ecstatic and we get really enthusiastic about this stuff and we may turn some people off by our enthusiasm. There was a point when I made the comment to Chris on one morning after I had been brutally beat up in a group over in Fort Worth. Brutally beat up. Physically manhandled. It was not a fun experience. And I remember calling Chris and I'm saying, screw this. I don't need it. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm going to go back into a middle-of-the-road deal and sit there. You know. And after some talking and a day or two, I began to realize the absurdity of that statement. And yet the only thing that what I was being attacked for was enthusiasm in that deal. But what I had to understand was all it took was one email from one member of that group that said, do you know what? Our group needed to hear what you said so dramatically, and it will affect some. Thank you for coming. Period. End of deal. You see? And I'm going, okay. So I'll take the heat. If some people want to slap me around for being enthusiastic about a gift from God that changed my life and had the ability to change your life.
It always amazes me. I'll be in a group and people come up after and Chris, you thanks. And then you'll have one person that'll come up after and says, you know, buddy, you really offended me what you said. And it's like I spend the rest of the night grinding my teeth, you know, about that one person, you know, and I forget all the great question that you ask. And I can't really add any more than what these guys have. Alcoholics Anonymous is such a central part of my life. It is not who I am. I am a multifaceted individual. But my life started November 13th, 1987. And that's when my awakened spirit started noticing plants again. And I started riding a bicycle again and started doing so many cool things. That's what life's about. There was a guy that came up here last night after we spoke, and he was shared for a minute and thanked us, and he said, I'm not going to be able to be here tomorrow. I've got my kids' soccer games tomorrow, and I'm the coach, and I'm going to have to go. And he was kind of apologetic because he wasn't going to be here. And I said, buddy, that's what this is about. Is we didn't get sober so we could come hide out in Alcoholics Anonymous. We got sober. We had our awakened spirit so that we could go out there and do life to the fullest. I want to do, y'all hear me, I get on these tears about people sitting around reading People magazine. You know, I mean, I spent years reading People magazine, watching how other people were living cool lives. And somebody finally leaned over, as Mark says, when are you going to start leading your life? You know, instead of looking at everybody else's life, when are you going to start doing some... And it's like he wasn't... I thanked him later. I cursed him immediately. But I thanked him later because the truth was, that's what I get a chance to do today. Not hiding out in AA. I don't hide out in AA. And I see a lot of people do that. There's a lot of concern that we're a cult, that we're just going to hide out, and only time I can be happy is when I'm in a meeting. That is not my experience. It's not my experience. I love coming to do these things. Folks, y'all need to come see my garden. It is impressive, to say the least. And I would love to show it to you sometime. That's all I got.
John. Yeah, my name is John. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. And my home group is the Depth and Weight group. And we got that, I don't know if it particularly from you guys, but it was a message that you guys shared. And what I want to say was that from the bottom of my heart, you three men saved my life. And I'm eternally grateful. And I love you all very much. One of the things, I've been coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for a long, long time, and been given the grace to recover from this disease. But what I'm experiencing in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is frightening to me, and I would just really like to get your feedback on it and your spiritual guidance on it, this thing with love and tolerance. We have brought this love and tolerance to such insanity. This big book was written back in 1939 when they talked about love and tolerance. And if anyone has studied history or studied this big book or studied the transformation of our society, tolerance had a completely different meaning back in 1939 than it now in the year 2004. But the most important part, it says love and tolerance. And I have always experienced the true love of Alcoholics Anonymous is a message and truth. When I had my sponsor who loved me enough to tell me the truth about what was going on in my life, that's when I began the process of recovery. And this thing that goes around love and tolerance, I see this people hurting other people in this fellowship through their sickness and their selfishness and their disgust. And innocent people are coming to this fellowship and dying because of sick people coming in here and acting out in sick ways and hurting others. And I'm frightened for it. And I have children. And God forbid my children were to have this disease. What would this place be like 20 years from now?
John.
Stir it up, brother. How do you comment about something you just said? Because you said it. I mean, you said that the whole deal, the baseline of love and tolerance is terrific. There would be nobody, there's not a man alive that I've ever come across that would have anything to say against love and tolerance. I mean, it's true. The trick here is that somewhere in the process, we've allowed love and tolerance to slide over into things like apathy and just this absolute sickness that allows people to sit in meetings and hurt, but we're gonna love them and we're not gonna help them. Sometimes you have to be. Let me ask you a question. This is real simple stuff. In your experience in AA, do you remember the love, or do you remember the time that the old crusty guy got in your face and said, "Why don't you stop taking the hits on these girls and this kind of stuff? Why don't you?" It was the actual direction from the big book that affected your life. You see, I mean, we sort of trivialize the whole love type deal, but somewhere in there, we've allowed this thing to get so convoluted. We let people come into our meetings and stir crap up and say all kinds of bizarre things and react in all kinds of bizarre ways, and we don't do anything to stop them. Why? We say it's out of love and tolerance. Tolerance does not dictate that I'm supposed to stand back and watch someone harm somebody else in our meeting. It does not do that. We must, in love, when Cliff Bishop passed me that note and said, "Why don't you shut up until you know what's in the big book?" He loved me to death. He loved me enough to feel uncomfortable enough to bring me that note and set it down there. He would have just soon not done that. I know Cliff. I know him today like I know my dad. You see? But he loved me enough to walk out on the line and just set it down. Good deal.
Page 98, my book tells me. It's not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes a difference between failure and success. Mm-hmm. So is it possible that love and tolerance means telling a drunk no? It's unacceptable. Or having an experience like Myers did with his sponsor? Or does love and tolerance mean I take on an attitude of apathy, or it's a good time to practice acceptance? Do I take a stand for what I believe in and what my experience is? Isn't that love and tolerance towards a drunk rather than walking them back to the next drink because I want to be loving and tolerant? And I have a different perception of what that means now than when I first walked in the door. So again, it's another call to how am I watering down information in the big book or using it conveniently to co-sign my delusional attitude. Here's a real neat deal. I'm sitting in a meeting one time, and this guy was just sharing from the floor about a lot of his experiences with women and a lot of ugly words. And in the middle, he's talking about his crack runs. This is an AA meeting. And I'm visiting this group, and a woman got up and walked out and says, "This is not going to affect my serenity," and left. What's wrong with that picture? That was her home group. She allowed this guy to go on like that and walked out because her serenity was going to be affected. Well, shame on her. And not one group member said anything, but yours truly, who was a visitor, did. I did speak to the drunk, to this guy afterwards, rather, after the meeting, and he really didn't want to hear me because that was my way of being loving and tolerant to him. I took a stand and shared something from the floor, and I caught hell from the group. They all looked at me like I was completely out of my mind. I felt like an outsider. But I did have it within me to grab that guy afterwards and tell him about Cocaine Anonymous and listen to him, but he didn't want to hear it. So there's a huge responsibility as to what I'm doing and how am I interpreting the information in the book. Am I using it for my own use, or am I using the information to help another alcoholic? Okay, thanks, John.
I concur. Love and tolerance has got nothing to do with apathy, folks. There's some responsibility that comes along with it. Bill?
Bill. Hi, everybody. My name is Bill. I'm a barefoot alcoholic. I want to thank you, gentlemen. I do have a question, but I really love that gentleman asking the question about the fanaticism because it's definitely an important question. And for me, what's interesting in regard to fanaticism is that I've actually looked up the word because I'm a fanatic. And the definition that I found was that in the dictionary it says that a fanatic can't stop talking about something and doesn't want to hear about anything else. And under that definition, I am a fanatic. But what I've seen in your gentleman's example and what I've seen in so many people who have had a spiritual experience as the result of the steps, not as a result, but as the result, is that an immense amount of compassion gets tapped into, an immense amount of freedom from suffering gets tapped into. Hmm. And because of this immense amount of compassion, and because of this immense amount of freedom and freedom from suffering that we've experienced within ourselves, because of this spiritual awakening, we see this suffering all around us. And we have this immense compassion to try to do something about it. And that's viewed as fanaticism. And for me, these three men here are incredible examples of the compassion and incredible examples of the freedom from the inner suffering and wanting to help others to not suffer anymore. And if that's fanaticism, then so be it.
I'll go with that.
But I do have a question. As you know, so many of us here are in the trenches and on the firing lines and are dealing with a lot of the stuff directly that you're talking about and you're speaking to so well this weekend. And one of the new things that has been stated to me and us is that the big book isn't everything. That's new to me. That's a new response to me to the kind of message that you're carrying and the kind of message that we carry. And the fact that the big book isn't everything. There's other literature that contradicts the big book, and that's also AA-approved literature, and that's these are the kind of things that some of us are getting in response to people that we speak to and that are carrying this kind of a message. But I was wondering if you guys could maybe respond to that.
I'll get this over real fast, short and sweet. If success rates in AA are better today than they were 60 years ago, I'm going to say we may be on the wrong track here, and we may need to pay attention to what that man just said in light of there may be other literature out there that's important. This kind of, look, I'm not going to discount that there's other literature that's important. I'm not going to do that. But our enthusiasm in getting back to the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous as the solution to our problem was based almost 100% on the fact that they were so damn successful. They got sober, stayed sober, and walked free and clear as a direct result of taking and adhering to those basic pieces of text there. So we drift week by week, month by month, year by year. We drift out into the ozone and we bring in all this other literature, all of it meaning well, and all of it, some of it is hugely fascinating. There's some great stuff out there. And yet we watch the statistical data disprove the success of it. And so now worldwide, some statistics say that we're less than 5% of us that are coming are staying. Less than 2% of us make it 5 years. 2%! Guys,
that's terrible.
I'm not a mathematical whiz. But you know what? That means out of this room right here, me and Peter are going to make it, and the rest of you guys are just screwed. And I know some of you are going to stay and dispute that. You bet. It sort of reminds me of the deal of if Mike walked in tonight and said, "Buddy, I got cancer," and I said, "God dang, Mike, that's horrible, man. What are we going to do about this stuff?" And he said, "Well, I don't know. I'm not really sure." And I said, "Well, you know, there's this fellowship thing. You could go hang out in that fellowship, and they read and they talk a lot and they talk about their problems, and it's pretty, you know, cool." And Mike would go, "Well, how many people are getting well doing that?" "Oh, I don't know, maybe 5%." Mike would look at, what do you think Mike would say? Mike would look at me and say, "Are you nuts? I got to have something with more depth and weight than that, you see? Let me go to something that's got more meat to it." But we trivialize the alcoholism like it's no big deal, and we just walk away from it. Anyway, that's why we want to stay back in that stuff. Let's go back and try it the old way. One of my guys that I sponsor called Old School AA. Well, he can call it whatever he wants to. I like Old School AA. I like the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous as a solution to my problem because it worked so effectively well once I did it.
If that's going on, and I'm not sure what literature Bill's referring to, I do know lots of things are coming into AA. I guess my question is then, why does our book still have to be watered down, and why do we have to allow our book to be watered down? And if those members are in such need of starting up something new, then great, but start up something new and leave Alcoholics Anonymous to where what has worked for so long. Here's the problem. There's only us here today. Let's say every one of us are having experiences with this book. When we go back into our AA backyards, what do we encounter? We're the minority and not the majority. So it's like drawing a line in the sand and passing this message on. And we're going to talk about this afternoon. The neat deal is, if I wake up because of my experience and the information in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, well, then I'm going to be moved to be on the firing line to go help somebody else, right? So now I get a prospect. They wake up, and they're going to go into their backyard and grab someone. Now we have three, and that's all we can do. And then they'll get someone and pull them through the archway. Now we have four. And little by slowly, we'll show up with different home groups, and we'll have these pockets of enthusiasm, and maybe some of us will draw a line in the sand and say, you know what, that's an outside issue, it don't belong here. Why it's AA-approved literature, shame on the people who are voting on this stuff. Which is a wake-up call to me personally and to a lot of us, what kind of service am I giving on that level to allow certain things in. That's all I got, thanks.
I would just tell him, "Buddy, if you got something that you think might work, try it." I mean, the only thing that ever worked for me was the message out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's all the experience that I can share with you. If If reading that meditation book has changed your life, read it. Bhakti Yadra. But in these meetings, in our fellowship, we need to be talking about the one thing we're talking about. What you got?
My name's Jim, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
And I appreciate the fact that you told us we're not here to bash AA. And I agree with you 100%. I've experienced all the horrible things and more that we've been talking about here today. But you see, I belong to a home group, and sometimes I go to area meetings, and they talk, they kind of brag there. Sometimes the DCM will get up and say, I'm so-and-so, and my home group is the best home group in the world. And everybody claps. And I belong to a home group that I'm making the best home group in the world because I'm making the difference. And I'm not a special alcoholic. I'm doing what you guys are telling us to do. And there are pockets of enthusiasm and pockets of true AA all over, and we're it. And the active alcoholic, active in service, the recovered alcoholic who's doing something has 10 to 20 times more power than the alcoholic who's sitting there saying, well, just keep coming back. Because they don't even go to the meetings where it counts and it votes. My home group has about 150 to 200 people on a Friday night at a speaker's meeting. We just did a group conscience, a business meeting. We had 8. My vote was important. I did something. Is it a perfect group? Of course not. I began about 4 years as an individual standing up at the front door greeting people. We finally got it into the service part where now we're getting teams of people up there to greet people.
Yeah.
You see, it's what you do. It's what you show them. They saw the results. They like it. Now they want to do more of it. Same way with doing the phone service. My group was not involved in any message carrying of any kind. If you want what we got, you're going to have to come here and get it. Well, today we take a phone service commitment once a month. It's not a whole lot, but it's more than we were doing because I took the action. You can too. These men here are telling us the truth, and it works in Texas, it works in Pennsylvania, it works in New Jersey, it works in Ohio, and it only works when we work it.
Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Good. Great. Yeah. Debbie.
Hi, I am an alcoholic. My name is Debbie Temple.
Hi, Debbie. It's
so good to be here, and thank you so much. Thank you so much. Besides the fact that I love you guys and you're my heroes, I just want to personally thank you for being out here and just getting people inspired and fired up. Every time I come to one of these deals, I'm just ready to go out there and just really wake people up, you know? But I want to share that I'm a member of a home group that I'm an active, proud member of that home group. It's a Belleville Thursday night group. We have an open speaker meeting on Thursday night, a warm, welcoming, tradition-based open speaker meeting. We also have a Monday night literature study meeting, and it's a closed meeting, and we work very hard in the traditions and the 12 concepts. We also have another set of principles called the 12 concepts. They're incredible. I'm very heavily involved in general service work, and I've been given the privilege and the honor to serve in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got involved in the traditions first. It's just my story, and that's a whole different story, but I got involved with the 12 steps through the 12 traditions first, having had a service sponsor to take me through the process of GSR, DCM, and those of you who are not familiar with that part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And through my service sponsor came my sponsor, who took me through the 12 steps for the first time. in our literature study meeting, it's a closed meeting, and we're always looking to more strengthen and unify the group. and keep our primary purpose to our recovery from alcoholism. And last Monday night, because this is all about the traditions, everything that we're talking about here is all about the traditions, because without the traditions, we're dead. We're dead. I'm dead as an individual, I'm dead as an alcoholic, and I'm dead as a member of this fellowship, and so is this fellowship. We had someone come in our meeting, and we go around the room and we introduce ourselves at this closed meeting, and one gal introduced herself and she said, I'm an addict. And the chairperson looked at me, got terrified, and I, you know, mouthed to him, ask. He was afraid. I mean, we're afraid to ask people that are coming to our closed meetings if you're an alcoholic. And so what he said was what the third tradition, and Chris, thank you so much for bringing up the difference between the short form and long form of the tradition. Thank you, and God bless you for that. The chairperson asked, because this is what we're taught, do you have a desire to stop drinking? I mean, this is a slippery slope that we've went down. Do you have a desire to stop drinking? She just told us she was an addict. And she said, she hesitated, and she said, yes. And he said, oh, good, great. And he was scared to death, and he wasn't going any further than that. And she didn't share at the meeting. I know if she had shared, something different other than what we were talking about would have come out. But we're reading right now one of our history books. We're reading Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. If any of you haven't studied our history books, please do. Read AA Comes of Age and Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and pass it on. Because that's our history. And that will tell you better than anything that we could ever say what we're supposed to be doing here. My sponsor and my service sponsor will not let me use the short form in the tradition. The reason why I'm up here is because I've been inspired now today as a result of what you shared and what we're talking about. There's something more that we can do at our Monday night meeting, because we're using the short form of the tradition, which my sponsor and my service sponsor won't let me use. And instead of asking, do you have a desire to stop drinking, I'm going to suggest at our next business meeting that we ask, do you suffer from alcoholism? If we ask, and they might say, I don't know. I don't know if I'm alcoholic. Okay, well, after the meeting, we'll talk to you, and we'll give you somebody to work with, and you'll find out. But that's the key right here. If we're asking people to comply to the long form of this, if we're asking a group to be a spiritual entity having one purpose, that's a whole different thing than just being a bunch of alcoholics, you know, helping people to, you know, overcome a desire to stop drinking. And so the whole thing is about that. And I just wanted to share what it says in the back of the book with under AA tradition. It says, and also, by the way, the long form of the traditions came out first. It's not a question, it's a comment, and I'm just about done. The long form of the traditions came out first, and they were for us, for the fellowship, for us to live by. The short form of the traditions came out later for the outside world, for the professionals, to shorten it so that they could better understand who we are and what we're doing. But this is what gives us what we have to do to stay together. Otherwise, like it says, most of us will finally die alone. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Good stuff, Deb.
My name is Bob, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bob.
Page 25, it says, when therefore we were approached by those who, in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us to but pick up a simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. I know you're going to probably talk about this in a little bit here, but as far as sponsorship and finding the people that have found the solution, how do you...
I'm going to pass on that until this afternoon, and I'm hoping you're going to be here, because that's what we're going to talk about all afternoon, is
okay.
Exactly what you're talking
about.
Yeah. Good question.
What time is it?
Good point. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Steve Judge.
Steve.
One thing I want to say, the question was about more literature being brought into AA. Something my sponsor had always told out to me is, you know, it says here, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. And this was written before all the other literature had come out. And those the people who wrote the book, they didn't have our history books. They didn't have, as Bill sees it and Dr. Bob and the good old timers. What happened is they were able to stay sober, you know, and forward to the second edition. At the end of it, it says, we would like to hear from those who are getting results from this book, particularly those who have commenced to work with other alcoholics, you know. And what he'd always told to me is that working with another alcoholic and doing what this book says to do, you will get results. It doesn't say you may get results or who could be getting results. It says you are getting results. Absolutely. You know, and with that, my question is, though, in my group, what we hide behind, or what the members of the group hide behind, is the blue card. Open meeting, closed meeting. Open meeting, you can talk about anything you want to talk about. Closed meeting, you have to talk about alcohol in a bottle, you know, and that's what they call it. Put it in a bottle. So what's your see on the blue card?
Our tradition says each group is autonomous, self-governing, and independent. Get rid of it. Set up a new group conscience.
The blue card is actually pretty specific. Even with an open meeting, it asks us to confine our discussions as they relate to alcoholism. And the babysitter has got nothing to do with alcoholism. So it's telling us still, even an open the definition between an open meeting and a closed meeting is that open meetings are for anybody. Anybody. Closed meetings are specifically for those who suffer from the disease of alcoholism. And they're asking us in a closed meeting to focus our topics on the blue card, on the open meeting, it also says the same thing. We want you to confine your discussion to those problems with alcohol. So it's not a way out, I can assure you. They're just, folks have a tendency to misinterpret what that says. Open and closed just tells us who can come and who can't come. In a closed meeting, it's just like Deb alluded to, buddy, you better be an alcoholic in a closed meeting. If you're not, you're not welcome. It's just that simple. I pass.
the reason why I say if you want to be rid of it and have your own group conscience is my old group, we had to. Because they were reading it during the notes and it wasn't even being paid attention to, but they paid attention to different information about restricting our comments to alcohol and alcohol only, and we came up with something that some of the group members voted on. Eventually got turned back anyway. That's why the group is... One of the reasons why the group's not around, but the blue card was not working for us. Yeah. Need to be very clear-cut, precise, exact, specific.
Okay. I want to cover that stuff this afternoon, too, because we're going to talk about group structure stuff, and we'll cover some of that, too.
We got time for a couple more real quick ones, then we got to go to lunch.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kathy.
And I'd like to thank you all for being here. This has really been great for me because, you know, coming up on 8 years, as some people have talked about being around there, I thought I was working a pretty good program till yesterday. And and I have to be honest about that, you know, and I've heard people talk about what people say in meetings, and I've said those things with the best of intentions. And but I've learned, at least in this program, that, you know, it's not the easy stuff that keeps me sober that I know about myself. It's the hard truths that I have to face about myself that, you know, keeps me working this path. One of the questions that I have is the God question, because, you know, I go to meetings when people do talk about God, and I hear other people who say, oh, they're bringing up the G word again. You know, people are uncomfortable when that's brought up. And I guess what I'm looking for is some direction how to handle that. You know, when people are saying, oh, we shouldn't really be talking about God, because some people, it'll drive them out of the rooms when people talk about God. And I agree, God's what this, or, you know, God's what this is all about, but I get frustrated when people say that, you know.
Absolutely. See it all the time on this thing. Remember what Dr. Bob said about this stuff? If God drives them out of the meeting, booze will drive them right back into the meeting. At some point in time, you're going to have to come to grips with this deal, that spiritual connection, that God talk, is what keeps us sober. It is the part that connects us and makes us healthy. But let's define it. Let's take it a step farther. We got guys that come in and want to talk about Jesus. I'm a Christian, guys. Scouts honor. I have not a problem at all with it, except that in cases like that, it becomes a Tradition 10 violation because it is an outside issue. You see? Does it mean that I can't worship or do whatever it is? No, not at all. But in the meeting, I need to be careful about how I couch it and what I do. Well, let me tell you something. From a guy who's seen meetings go both ways, both sick with no God in it and with God in it, I guarantee you, you look at any of the old literature and you are absolutely inundated by the talk of spiritual solution and of God. And anything that goes counter to that, you're treading in a real weird area. Real weird.
The book is crystal clear. In the same context that it says introduce yourself as a recovered alcoholic in chapters working with others and in the vision for you, it says stress the spiritual part freely. We cannot. What Meyer said is so true. What you pray, what you worship to, that is your business. If your higher power is Kermit the Frog, then so be it. But it's not my right to push my spiritual belief on you. But folks, the program is built around a thing called a spiritual experience. It is built around a spiritual solution. If that makes you uncomfortable, then you need to make a decision. Do I want to try to do this deal or do I want to go away? I am not going to water the message of hope down. I've asked this from the podium 1,000 times. I wonder how many people over the years we've killed because we walked on tiptoes around this spiritual piece. We don't want to talk about the God thing, but isn't it the God thing that's going to get me sober? Yeah, but we don't want to talk about the God thing. It's like, buddies, what are we doing? It's so open and roomy, the fellowship. We can worship anything we want. That's a cool thing. But that's what we're talking about, this love and tolerance. You know, I want to make this comfortable so everybody has a nice time, so we're not going to talk about anything that can make you uncomfortable. But if the spiritual end is making you uncomfortable, then we really need to talk about this. This is good stuff. Bless you. Let's keep talking about it.
One of the reasons why you don't talk about God is because you'll scare a newcomer out. So here's what's going on.
Yeah.
You have a newcomer who's sick and suffering, dictating, not intentionally, but dictating to the group what they're going to do, rather than the elder statesman in the group saying, no, this is the solution, and we're going to show it to him and express it to him or her freely. Here's the problem. Is it possible that the people who are saying don't talk about God is because they have very little or no relationship with God, possibly a moderate or a hard drinker, and don't need to have a spiritual experience as a result of these steps? So God really doesn't interest them. And when you talk about God, what you do is remind them of something that they really ought to be doing, so they don't want to hear about it. So let's not talk about God because we'll use an excuse, we'll scare a newcomer out. No, you're reminding me of something I should be doing and I'm not, and I don't want to hear truth. We're back to hearing truth and getting hit with truth again. You know what? You know what your solution is? Keep talking about God. Because someone will knock on your door, and if we save one, we did our job. You go keep talking about God.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Got time for one more.
My name's Luke, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Luke.
My question would be, in step 10, when I first arrived there, I vigorously commenced it as a way of life. And since then, I've seen my awareness drop and my ability to watch drop, and I do not see myself following the instructions as vigorously as I had. And as far as step 11 goes, I maintain the discipline. However, my thought life is becoming interrupted by chatter, not the old chatter, but chatter. And in your experience, is this time to go back through 1 through 9, or is there, you know, something I could be missing? I still do work with others, but I've seen 10 and 11. I've seen interference with them.
That's such a good question, buddy. I'll be real brief because we're going to do some stuff this afternoon that directly addresses what you just talked about, but the necessary juju to do what you need to do in this program comes through 10, 11, and 12. I mean, it's there for a reason. The reason a lot of us suffer mightily in that area is because nobody holds us accountable to do it. You got a sponsor standing on your neck wanting you to do inventory, and he stands there until you do it. pick any of these action steps that are up there. But we never view 10, 11, and 12, or 10 and 11 especially, as action steps. And so they're so easy to trivialize. We can put some distance between us and that. It's like one night my sponsor called me. We've been working together for a couple of years, and he said, "Myers, let me ask you a question. Do you ever, ever say anything wrong?" And I said, "Well, you know I do. Every time we talk." And he goes, "Oh, okay." He said, "You ever get into dispute with your wife?" I went, "You know I do." He goes, "Oh, okay. Well, how come you never call me as a step 10 act?" And he just turned around and walked off. And I'm going, "Don't you walk away from me. I need to do like this." But it's like he just nailed me, you see? Because it's exactly what happened. What I have done is I've slid off into this weird gray area where I have become a hypocrite in my own recovery deal. I am now telling my guys, you must practice this step 10 and 11 stuff, and yet I'm not doing it myself. And so I'm wondering why day by day I become more... Step 10 sets itself up to keep all the crap apart that we did in our inventory work. And we wonder how subtly, day by day, this patina of haze begins to build between us and that sunlight of the Spirit. And it gets darker, and it gets darker, and I have words at the guy at the cleaners, and I have words with my wife, and I speak harshly to my daughter, and I have all of these three things I just mentioned are things that I need to be dealing with in step 10, but don't. Because my ego and my selfishness and self-centeredness has now rekindled itself. Mm-hmm. I'm an arrogant little SOB again. And they weren't that unkind, those words I said. Yeah, they were. Mm-hmm. Anything that builds up that haze again and that film between me and God is dangerous, dangerous stuff. Because as an alcoholic, I get sick real quick. As soon as he's gone, I get sick real quick. And pretty soon, I'm twisted around the axle again. I'm having words with people. The spiritual malady is full-blown in my life again. And I'm in trouble. Real, live, honest, palatable trouble. We'll talk about that this afternoon. Yeah.
Good stuff. You ready for lunch? Good, because I need to go pee.